Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're back in the book called Macht der Gedanken, or The Might of Thoughts. And we're going to... I thought I would do a show this evening on something I ran across. I'm reading the book for the third time. And I ran across something on page 36 that talks about the fetus in the womb, and the fact that the fetus in the womb actually thinks. So, and that's starting at the 21st day when the spirit form comes in to the body of the child, the fetus actually starts to think. So you actually do have a person in there at 21 days. So it kind of puts a different take on abortion and things. But I wanted to read this. Thus, at birth, when there are basic characteristics already present, then these were already formed with the development of the human being in the womb, simply through the mind of the thoughts, the developing human being. Therefore, it is erroneous to assume that the newly conceived life lives without thoughts during the nine-month period of human development in the womb, and that it does not develop greatly, or does not develop at all, in regard to its entire personality, as well as in regard to its character, morality, and psyche, because that allegedly only happens after birth. This claim corresponds not only to a fallacy, rather to an irrational teaching and a wrong representation. As a matter of fact, thoughts pertaining to profound learning and the forming of personality, as well as the forming of morality and the psyche and the basic character, are namely already maintained by the developing human being in the womb and are no less mightful than those thoughts which are thought later after the birth and during the life. The volition of the human being is not significant if the corresponding thoughts do not mightfully realize the volition. It is basically true that the human being attracts that which he or she is. All quirks, inclinations, wishes, desires, and zeal can be changed and thwarted by the might of the thoughts. When the thoughts are given a corresponding direction and are awarded the necessary power, the direction of the thoughts is thereby determined by the consciousness, stimulated by its impulsations, intuitions, inspirations, and ideas. Therefore, the consciousness forms the innermost thoughts, which develop by means of its power, and which in practice nourish themselves, and indeed toward the good or evil, or the negative or the positive. The human being thereby becomes the creator of his or her own destiny, entirely according to the aphorism, God helps those who help themselves. In this sense, God is he or she who forms the human being's destiny, the human being him/herself. And this God is the inner self from which the thoughts with their might are created. Therefore, the human being of his or her own thoughts, regardless of whether it is a state of actual inner freedom or a negative state of inner imprisonment, through his or her thinking alone, the human being determines whether he or she stagnates or evolves. The thoughts and the actions and the formations which result from them are the formers and guardians of one's own destiny. They hold the human being prisoner when they are of a low, negative nature, and they create and give freedom, peace, love, and harmony when they are good, positive, and equalized. That's page 36 from the book called The Might of Thoughts, Macht der Gedanken, by Billy Meyer, Edward Albert Meyer. fantastic bit of information there. So we are certainly thinking and we are alive in the womb very much. And I have a clip here from the Discovery Channel, and it's called The Ultimate Guide to Pregnancy. So let's listen to a little bit of this, and we'll go from there.
It takes just 2 cells to make a human being. 2 cells and a miracle. In 9 months, the pair of cells blossoms into billions. Where once was nothing, now grows a tiny human, gently nestled and protected in mother's womb. Together, mother and child share this odyssey of life, nurturing, and rapid change. A magnificent adventure called pregnancy. Is unique, and yet every one of us is more alike than we might imagine. Our chromosomes and genes are almost identical, and we all got here in much the same way, voyagers on the same miraculous journey as ourselves became ourselves. This is the story of that journey. It's about the bond between mother and child. A bond that starts invisibly from the moment of conception. From the very first moment when two tiny cells begin to transform into a new person, the mother's body starts to reshape and remodel itself. She becomes perfectly suited for carrying the most precious cargo imaginable. The fragile beginning of life itself. Reproduction is both exquisite and exquisitely common, perfect in its design. It begins the instant 400 million sperm launch against the cervix, the entrance to the woman's reproductive system. Each is programmed to seek out the egg and fertilize it. It's a risky mission. Many sperm perish in the acidic climate of the vagina. The strongest make their way through the cervix to start their marathon. The sperm must swim the equivalent of 9 miles through hostile waters to reach the egg.
Out of 200 to 400 million sperm, only a few make it to the egg itself, and it does so by whipping its tail.
Vigorous, but also desperate and doomed, most get lost in the folds of the uterus or follow the wrong fallopian tube where no egg exists. The remaining sperm race toward their target, and only one can fertilize the egg. The egg is one of the biggest cells in the human body. Of the hundreds of millions of sperm, mere hundreds find it. They surround the egg, each trying to burrow its way in. The instant one sperm penetrates the zona pellucida, or eggshell, the exterior closes and the race is over. All other sperm are shut out. The egg is sealed, and so is the fate of the person who will grow from it. The fertilized egg now has all the genetic information it needs to create new life. A glorious chain reaction has begun. Like the embrace that began the process, the nucleus of the egg and sperm join inside the egg nearly a day later. Together, they create the very blueprint from which a new person will be made.
You've got 23 chromosomes from your father, and you've got 23 chromosomes from your mother.
Inside the nucleus of the egg and sperm is a pronucleus, a capsule containing the 23 chromosomes on which the DNA code is written.
Those two pronuclei will come close together in that position. The chromosomes in each will have doubled, so you've got 46 in each. The pronuclei will dissolve. Those chromosomes come together, and they're then pulled apart. And the cell then divides, and you've got a two-cell embryo.
Only two cells, and yet the future baby's sex, looks, even potential health problems are already determined. This tiny speck is pushed by finger-like cilia through the fallopian tube toward the uterus. On the long journey, it divides again and again. At 32 cells, this cluster begins its transformation. The cells divide into distinct types, one type destined to become the baby, the other its supporting organ, the placenta. The cells continue to feverishly multiply, unnoticed by the mother. In 6 days, one cell has bloomed to nearly 200, and the embryo has outgrown its protective bubble. Like a flower bursting from its bud, it emerges and expands, burrowing into the soft, warm folds of mother's uterus. In a matter of days, cells become structures, building a human framework. Among the first is the neural tube, which in short time will become the brain and the spine.
It's at this stage that the cells on the back of the embryo will start rising, will form a tube and actually come together at the top of that tube and fuse. And this all begins at the midpoint of the back, and it'll proceed in a zipper-like fashion from the midpoint towards the head and towards the tail.
By the end of the third week comes another milestone. The head and the tail portion of the tube fuse completely.
Well, that's the beginning of life. That's a show called Discovery Channel, The Ultimate Guide to Pregnancy. It's describing the physical formation of the child in the womb. What the book, The Mind of Thoughts, is concerned about are the thoughts that take place in the human being. And those thoughts start all the way back in the womb. 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, the spirit form enters into the body of the child. The spirit form is the spiritual consciousness. Something also comes with the spiritual consciousness. Our material consciousness comes as well. The material consciousness is created on the spiritual side. Literally, the overall consciousness block creates and programs a new consciousness and a new personality between lifetimes. So when the spirit form comes into the superior colliculus, that midbrain, that lower part of the midbrain, what also comes in is the new material consciousness, the new personality, the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, the unconscious mind, the wisdom of your predecessor personalities, are stored in your subconscious. I'm going to be playing a lot of clips tonight. I've got another clip here called Reincarnation in the Spirit Form. It's by Michael Utibrock from Figu, Canada. And this is also from a YouTube that's out there. If you look for Reincarnation in the Spirit Form, I think you'll probably find it. It's a superb, superb movie. It's full of so much information. You'll have to watch it many, many times to try to absorb all this. It's kind of quiet. I'll try to turn it up so you can hear it, but let's listen.
The spirit form. What is it? What is its purpose? Here is an overview. In order to evolve, the creation creates the human spirit form. And this spirit form, in turn, evolves independently through the human being's material consciousness. Prior to entering the human being for the first time, the spirit form is an absolutely neutral energy agglomeration in timeless existence and is totally unknowing. Once it enters into the human being, its goal is to collect wisdom, knowledge, love, etc., through countless reincarnations to eventually merge with the creation, whereby the creation has the possibility to further evolve. Just for clarity of terminology, here's a brief explanation of what the creation is, taken from the Decalogue by Billy Meyer. The creation is the being and the non-being of the life. It is the most immense mass of spiritual energy in the universe. It is spirit in purest form and unmeasurable in its wisdom, in its knowledge, in its love, and in its harmony and truth. The creation is something spiritually dynamic, a pure spirit intelligence energy, ungraspable for human beings, prevailing over all, and at all times active, creative, standing in unstoppable evolution, all gathered into itself, wisdom and love. In order to evolve, the spirit form creates the overall consciousness block, which in turn creates the consciousness block, which harbors the consciousness, personality, and the ego to gather values in the material life. On day 21, after conception, both the spirit form and the consciousness block enter the body. That is when the heart begins to beat. From the superior colliculus, the spirit form spreads its spiritual energy throughout every fiber of the body of the human being in a fine filigree. When the spirit form enters within the human being, it remains within its own realm. It is of a pure creational nature and is not able to be humanly or materially influenced, for example, through sickness and disease. The ego, the I, represents the personality, respectively, the material consciousness. It independently makes perceptions, researches, and explores things and facts, consciously learns and processes results. Evolutive values, that which correspond to truth and reality, are transferred over in an impulse-based form from the thoughts and feelings to the spiritual consciousness. The spirit form then further processes and stores these within itself for all time. In this manner, the spirit form grows in its power and energy as it becomes wiser and more knowing. Neutral positive impulses are also transmitted to the material consciousness from the spiritual realm. The moment that the brain's activity ceases is the moment when the spirit form and the consciousness block both go to their own underworldly spheres. The consciousness block goes to the realm of the overall consciousness block. The overall consciousness block dissolves the I or ego and then processes all that which the consciousness and its personality could not overcome or work out in a previous material life. This is processed into knowledge, love, and wisdom, and evolutive values are then released to the spirit form, whereby it can further improve itself. The consciousness and its personality are then dissolved, stored, and as well, their power and energy are changed into a completely neutral form by the overall consciousness block. Once this neutrality is achieved, the overall consciousness block creates and programs a new consciousness harboring a new personality and a new I or ego, and then the consciousness block is ready to incarnate into a new material body of a human being. Having a completely new personality guarantees love, freedom, knowledge, wisdom-based progress, because through the new personality, there are new ideas, views, opinions, perceptions, cognitions, etc. For this reason, a personality is never repeated and therefore can only incarnate, whereas the spirit form reincarnates because it remains the same throughout the life and death process, albeit its power and energy increases as it becomes wiser. Again, on day 21, the consciousness block and the spirit form enter the fetus, but the consciousness level of the human being is starting from where it left off in the previous material life. The overall consciousness block programs or inputs into the memory of the subconsciousness, which is a factor of the consciousness block, the essence of all evolutive values that were gathered throughout all previous incarnations. These evolutive values are comprised of consciousness forms, which are all at various levels of development. Examples of consciousness forms can be love, respect, patience, honesty, etc. The highest level of each of these consciousness forms is considered to be its essence. These essences, which are all inputted into the subconsciousness, are then representative of the overall level of consciousness evolution. In addition to the inspirations coming from the program memory in the subconsciousness, the material consciousness is influenced by the planetary storage banks. As already stated, the overall consciousness block stores the consciousness block once it has been processed. The storage banks of the overall consciousness block is where all of the essences are stored. However, there are also the planetary storage banks. These too are made up of fine energy. Thoughts, emotions, feelings, each word that was ever thought or spoken, habits, ideas, interests, abilities, everything that a person is, these are all deposited in the storage banks as impulses. There is a unique frequency of stored impulses generated by the thoughts and feelings. All that which is in the storage banks can be made one's own if the corresponding frequencies are produced. Therefore, other egos and consciousness forms can be brought to use if one is able to create the same frequencies. This means that abilities of former personalities can be brought to use in a conscious or unconscious form. This connection is also possible with other egos not connected to the same line of previous egos.
Sorry about that. We got a little feedback there. Sometimes I have to turn those up a little louder than I'd like to. Anyway, that was Michael Udibrock from Figu, Canada, talking about the spirit form. And there's a lot of technical information in there. It's real easy to get lost in. The spirit form, and every person has a spirit form, creates, before any physical incarnations ever occur, before you ever live the physical lifetime, the spirit form creates something called the overall consciousness block. And that overall consciousness block will then also create things. For example, it will create your material consciousness. It creates a new consciousness and a new personality each time the spirit form is about to reincarnate. So even though people that have incarnated, you know, for example, Plato incarnated in the physical world, and then that same spirit form incarnated later as a man named Otto Muck, who worked actually in World War II for the Nazis at the rocket research area in Peenemünde, according to Meyer information. And that personality was programmed and created in the overall consciousness block, and that consciousness was programmed before it came into that physical incarnation again. So that is part of what goes on, and these are part of what are called the creational natural laws, which take place. And it's interesting, one of the things that Michael Udebrock said there is the spirit form becomes more powerful with each incarnation if there's the evolution of the consciousness. I sent an email to one of the people who works closely with Billy to get some more information on that idea. And I sent an email to Marianne Ewinger, and she explained it like this. She said, yes, of course, the spirit form grows in its energy and power when it gets wiser. It's like a low voltage current and a high voltage current. The spirit consists of highly concentrated, high fine fluidal energy and was created by the high spirit energy of the creational universal consciousness at the beginning of its journey back to the creation. It is without knowledge and wisdom. That means our spirit form is without knowledge and wisdom in its early incarnation. But as it is the human being's duty to evolve his or her spirit form through the consciousness, after about 60 to 80 million years, the spirit form is so much evolved that a further reincarnation into the physical body is no longer necessary. But the evolution goes on in the level of what's called the High Council or Arahadath Rasada. Eventually, the spirit form moves up through seven different levels in the spirit area into the Patali level, where it unites with creation. And then it goes on in the creation because it then belongs to creation. And there's also an explanation given in this in the book called The Goblet of Truth. It says in chapter 25, and thus you humankind of earth, as you yourselves developmentally change in your current life and in all your many new personalities, which you were since time immemorial and always new birth, so also the creation itself changes developmentally by creating in itself ever more love, knowledge, and wisdom. This happens by its learning through your spirit form, which gives life to you and evolves itself spiritually, integrating into itself everything that you create in terms of love, knowledge, and wisdom. And then your spirit form will one day unite with creation itself, longer after it no longer requires a human body, but evolves further only as a pure spirit form. Then the creation takes from it everything that your spirit form has learned through love, knowledge, your wisdom over many incarnations, through that which the creation integrates into itself. It evolves spiritually, just like you as a human being do with regard to your consciousness. I'm going to pick back up in this clip here, and I'm going to see if it'll sound okay, a little quieter. And again, this is Michael Udebrock from... Sorry for that, guys. You probably didn't hear half of what I just read. Anyway, let's continue with our clip here. And sorry for the technical screw-up. Here we go.
The spirit form is of a pure, fine material, spiritual, creational form. It is absolutely neutral in power and energy. The spirit form exists from a creation-based learning consciousness or evolution consciousness and perceives only neutral positive impulses from which it builds knowledge, love, and wisdom and stores it until the highest relative perfection is reached. The spirit form is not able to think creatively or to create its own ideas. It plays a passive role. The spirit form consciousness in itself is not conscious and has no ego in the form of self-conscious being. It is only active in the form that it is the neutral recipient and processor of evolutive impulses, whereby it creates wisdom, love, knowledge, and stores it in itself. The spirit form has to evolve through the consciousness of the human being. The human consciousness is of a material and transitory nature. It is active in a conscious, creative, and evolutive manner, and therefore has a conscious consciousness evolution, unlike animals, which have instinct evolution, or plants that have an impulse-based evolution, etc. The process of the reincarnation of the spirit form and the incarnation of consciousness blocks continues for 40 to 60 million years, 18 million years of which are spent in the physical realm. This is then followed by 56 million years in the half-physical and half-spiritual realm, followed by nearly 3 billion years in the pure spirit levels before entering and becoming one with the creation itself, whereby the creation further evolves. The spirit form is not the soul. The soul is an incorrect term for the psyche. A human being cannot take their personality with them into subsequent incarnations, as has been falsely taught by the Buddhist or Hindu religions. A human being's spirit form cannot enter into an animal or into a plant in another reincarnation, nor is the reverse possible. Upon the deceasing of the human body, life does not continue in nirvana, paradise, or heaven, nor in a hell or Hades. There is no possibility of a resurrection or sentencing on Judgment Day, nor any karma-burdened future life.
Michael Utterbrock from Figu, Canada. Very interesting bit of work there. He's a musician as well as a person that studies the Meyer material. I guess him and I have that much in common. Let me once again read this. Again, this email from Marianne Eulinger from Switzerland, the woman, one of the women that works closely with Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer. She says, yes, of course, the spirit form grows in its energy and power when it gets wiser. It's like a low voltage current and a high voltage current. The spirit consists of highly concentrated, high fine fluid energy that was created by the high spirit energy of the creational universal consciousness. At the beginning of its journey back to creation, it is without knowledge and wisdom. What that means is the human spirit form in its early incarnations has no knowledge or wisdom. But with each lifetime, we gather more wisdom, we gather more knowledge. And remember, wisdom is kind of energy. Wisdom is a kind of knowledge that produces energy, and that's how we help the creation to evolve. Eventually, after about 60 to 80 million years, our spirit form doesn't need a body anymore. There are no need for further reincarnations into a physical body. Eventually, we get to a level. The seventh level of our evolution is purely spiritual. It's called the High Council or Arahat Athrasada, and it goes up to what they call the Patali level. And then we finally unite with the universal consciousness. And let me read a little section here from The Goblet of Truth, another one of Billy's writings. All of you who think of the wellspring of all wisdom when standing and sitting, when you are lying and on your side, pondering over the wellspring of all wisdom, as well as its firmaments, the universe and the earth worlds, the stars and all the existence of the living, then you will become knowing that you have not been created in vain, but that you shall fulfill the sense of existence, so that you may become wise and full of love in your inner world. In order to transfer these values into your spirit body, which will one day combine and unite with the wellspring of creation. The universal consciousness is neither good nor evil. Well, hold on. Let me check the chat. Do you guys have sound? Somebody put something in the chat room there if you can hear me anyway. Hopefully people are hanging on and can hear. If anybody wants to call in chat, please do. The guest call is 917-889-7099. I've been playing a lot of clips this evening, playing some stuff from Michael Udebrock. Played a little bit of a documentary there as well. I'm going to switch gears here shortly, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about the might of thoughts, something called the vicious cycle. Negative repeating thoughts. If you have lower thoughts, you can follow that with lower feelings, lower habits, lower circumstances in your life. So you start out with a lower thought and you end up with bad circumstances in your lives. And some of these lower thoughts can happen unconsciously with no awareness of them. Others happen consciously. And if you have a thought that produces a lower feeling, you probably started with a lower thought. You may not have identified it. And Billy puts it this way on page 28 of the Maya Thoughts. He says, consequently, the human being is shaken and knocked about by the circumstances of his life as long as he or she believes himself to be a helpless created creation of external conditions and influences. We are the masters of the circumstances of our life. That which the human being thinks, he makes real. So our good and positive thoughts need to be tended and nurtured. And one way you do that is by having a good opinion of yourself. You should start with a good opinion of yourself. Eventually, we all get to these very high levels of spirituality. We all become what's called the King of Wisdom or the Ishwish. It just takes millions of years. So why not learn here in the beginning how to control your thoughts, how to steer your thoughts so you don't become a criminal, a felon, a miser, so you don't become jealous or vengeful, so you don't become a hater. Because if you become these things, it's because you've had corresponding thoughts, corresponding negative thoughts for a long time. And your thoughts can rotate in a vicious cycle. Negative thoughts produce lower feelings, which affect the psyche. The psyche responds to these and produces more negative thoughts. It's a vicious cycle. And that's where things like meditation kicks in. When you develop the ability to control your thoughts, and you develop the ability to stop thinking when you need to stop thinking. Because there are certain kind of thoughts which are damaging, which are destructive. We need to, for example, when you get into that vicious cycle where you're rotating negative thoughts, visualize something. You can visualize a blue sky. Take a deep breath. That's a positive visualization, and that will clear your mind. And you'll probably have a positive feeling from that. Now visualize a color of green. Think of a beautiful hillside. Think of beautiful trees on this hillside. Take a deep breath. Breathe out. That'll probably produce a good feeling. That was a healthy thought. Think of the sun up in a blue sky. Focus on the sun, the warmth of the sun, the healing that comes with being in the sun. Take a deep breath. Relax. Now think of an apple, a red apple. Think of a tomato hanging on a tomato vine. Think of a red rose. Think of a sunset. Think of a beautiful scene that you know in your mind, someplace wonderful you like to go. Think of Mount Adams in Washington State if you want to. So use visualization. Use deep breathing. Learn how to relax. To break the cycle of these negative repeating thoughts. And probably the same kind of thing can be used to break addictions. We have addictions to video games, addictions to food. We follow bad habits of all kinds. And we get these reward pathways from our brain. It's called the mesolimbic dopamine system. We get these stimuluses. And unfortunately, many people are just living for stimuluses. We are alive to evolve our consciousness. And that's where the true happiness is. When your consciousness evolves, you can start to share the happiness of the universal consciousness. You see, the universal consciousness, it radiates love. Not human love. Not a love that's not dependable, but a love that's perfectly, always constant. Not a love that's selfish, not a love that's romantic, but a very stable love. Because the universal consciousness wants to come into union with all people, with all animals, with the universe itself. See, love is the fundamental law of creation. Every tiny plant, every tiny animal follows the law of love and fulfills its purpose in creation. Only the human being can turn away from love. Sometimes we turn away from love because of our unconscious thoughts, because of our repressed feelings. We have subliminal perceptions. We have automatic reactions. We have hidden phobias. We have desires. We have complexes. And Billy says on page 44 here, he says, and furthermore, it is a fact that while the human being wants the good and the positive, he slash she constantly prevents exactly the achievement of the good and positive. Because through wrongly steered thoughts, the human being maintains wishes, hopes, and yearnings which in no wise agree with the good and the positive, and therefore do not harmonize with them. Well, we have people in control in our world today which do not harmonize with the good and the positive. The Meyer Information calls these rulers, these elite rulers, the Dark Order. And because of the Dark Order, which we here in this community call the New World Order, we have all kinds of problems in our age. Let me read something here from the Goblet of Truth that talks about this age that we live in. It's called the Third Millennium. It says, therefore, as never before in history, of the earthly humanity, lying and deception, as well as deceit, falseness, as well as servitude to the government, will be held as truth. An ever greater calamity will be built upon it. And it will be increasingly the case that you people will be treated like animals for the slaughter, implanted with electronic data chips, by means of which you will be controlled and robbed of freedom by authorities, public offices, and governments. Although in your ignorance, you will think that you live as free people, although you are in fact servants of the governments. In this way, public authorities, official bodies, and those in government will rule over you in a way that has never happened before, meaning that you will no longer chart the course of your own fate in the collective, because this will be done by those who exercise total power and control over you. In this way, every one of you will be a servant and a slave of authorities, public bodies, and governments, or of those people in power and their vassals who possess power in this respect. Still, in the early part of the third millennium, there will be time for human beings to prevent this. If you would unify as a humanity and rise up against these threatening future machinations of governments and the scientists and technicians who obey them, in order to prevent the threat named in this regard from occurring. And then again, Billy goes on to talk about overpopulation and the dangers that are associated with that. In the third millennium, people will become indolent. They'll become obtuse. They won't be able to think through problems logically. This is because they lost the ability to think independently, because they no longer practice things like deductive reasoning. Instead, they're handed what they're told and told what to think by the media, by the newspapers, by the magazines. In order to evolve, we have to have independent thought. And this consciousness conditioned tyranny that we live in is short-circuiting the normal course of evolution. It's literally undermining the whole purpose of our existence. That's how important it is that you learn to correctly steer your thoughts so you can have inner freedom and harmony, so you can have self-control. Synonyms for harmony include concord, unity, peace, friendship. So if you have an inner harmony, it's a good possibility that you're maintaining that neutral, positive thinking. Something that is neutral is balanced. Billy always talks about the balance between the negative and the positive. We should be just a little balanced towards the positive. The universal consciousness is a neutral, positive entity. In the Meyer information, it's referred to as a Wesenheiten. Now, we as human beings are Wesen. That means that we have personality. The universal consciousness functions very automatically, almost robotically, but ironically, it radiates love. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of this universal consciousness. And I think this incredible variety and beauty of nature is the way this superintelligence clarifies its own thoughts. And it does it by creating material things, beautiful material things that we can appreciate if we develop the sense of observation. And observation is the basis for true love. When you learn what's called empfinden, or that fine sensitive feeling, you can start to sense this radiating love. Now, psychically disturbed human beings of all kinds, they only see black and therefore negatively, and their perceptual ability becomes very limited Because their world of thoughts falls prey to this limitation. They can only think and only move in this narrow framework. And indeed, this framework allows only limited and negative perceptions. In fact, when you're in the vicious cycle of negative repeating thoughts, you lose inner freedom. You become a prisoner of your own thoughts. The thoughts are forced into a cycle in which the same thoughts and themes of thoughts, they appear again and again. And where a rotation of the thoughts is hard to break out of. It's difficult to free yourself from these. So practice learning to relax. Practice meditation. Take deep breaths. Learn to visualize. Feelings represent primary processes in the carrying out of life. And your feelings shouldn't be stifled or eliminated. But your feelings come from your thoughts. So if you're having these thoughts and they're producing negative feelings, go back and think about these thoughts. And there's a difference between feelings and emotion. Because emotion comes surging up like lightning. It's almost uncontrollable. And we're often it's of short duration. However, feelings tend to manifest slowly. You will manifest a deep appreciation, a love, an awe for creation slowly because the thought process needs to be built up. Your emotions are not preceded by any thought process. Your conscious and unconscious thinking is responsible for the creation of your feelings. And lower thoughts form lower feelings, which form lower habits, which lead to lower circumstances in your life. Examples include alcoholism, sorrow. If you're in sorrow and grief, chances are you're having lower thoughts. You need to switch back to neutral positive. If you're starting to have errors in judgment, if you're starting to get into suffering, it's probably because your thoughts are destructive. If you feel confused and exhausted, it's probably because you're in this vicious cycle and you don't even realize it. You don't even know it. So take control of your thoughts and help your own physical well-being. Your own physical well-being is enhanced by neutral, positive, healthy thinking. And it affects your appearance. Negative thoughts, negative feelings, negative habits will show up on your appearance. You will destroy your own body. You'll cause wrinkles and lines in your own face. But if your thoughts are strong and pure, it will cause peacefulness and harmony within your body. And it will enhance your health. So, if thoughts are constructive, if they're beautiful, if they're positive, if they're happy, if they're equalized, then the feelings like that, you'll have the same kind of happy, equalized, beautiful feelings that form in your psyche. Wouldn't you rather have those kinds of feelings anyway? So remember, live and help live. If you start to learn to control your thoughts, pass this information on to others. If and when you learn to control your thoughts, you'll also tend to help others, and you'll be what's called magnanimous. You'll be generous, forgiving, especially towards people less powerful than yourself. You'll be forgiving of insult and injury. You'll be free from petty resentfulness and vindictiveness. And somehow, when you're magnanimous, The creational natural laws tend to help you anyway. And the book of OM speaks about this magnanimous nature of people who are following the spiritual teachings and who start to get this inner stillness. And it's a real beauty. And it's the purpose of being alive, and eventually it will lead you to optimism. When you start to learn the incredible power of your own thoughts, you will be much, much more optimistic about life, because there's really nothing that's holding you back besides yourself. So start with your own thoughts. Take control of your own thoughts and start to change the circumstances of your life. Well, I hope you're enjoying these programs. I always enjoy hearing from people. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we're looking at a book called Mach der Gedanken by Edward Albert Meyer, farmer in Switzerland, probably the wisest man on Earth, the oldest spirit form on the planet. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Have a good evening, and we'll see you next time.